So glad you're here. So glad you're back. Now, before we have a little bit of sharing about your week, I kind of want you to picture yourself inside your own hula hoop. You remember the hula hoop from last week. And I'm sure there are some tales and stories of each other, accusing each other of get back in your hula hoop, or you're outside your hula hoop, or you're inside my hula hoop, something like that. So as we begin, I want you to just picture yourself inside your own hula hoop. I know that you're sitting close to somebody. That's okay. But still, picture yourself inside your own hula hoop. And you've got to picture yourself that there's 1 foot of space, 6 inches of space between you and whomever you're near. You're in your hula hoop. They are in their hula hoop. And I want you to remember, inside this hula hoop, you have everything provided to be reasonably happy and at peace inside your own hula hoop. You do not need nor require anything outside of your hula hoop to be anything but what it exactly is. Let me say that again. You do not need nor require anything outside of your hula hoop to be anything but what it exactly is. You may wish, you may desire, you may hope, but you do not need, nor do you require. Things are exactly as they are. Why would you protest that? Most people live lives of protesting everything outside of their hula hoop, which you're going to learn as we go forward. People who have the least amount of self-control inside their hula hoop must control everything and everybody outside of their hula hoop. You'd have to ask yourself, that's a lot of energy being expended in attempting to change things that they absolutely cannot change. So just picture, just for a moment, you're inside your hula hoop, and everything is exactly as it is, and you're reasonably at peace, and you're reasonably happy. Notice I didn't say perfectly happy. That would be one day in another life, supremely happy. This is reasonably happy in an imperfect world. And in this hula hoop, remember a simple quotation by Carl Jung, J-U-N-G. So back in the turn of the century, the 20s, 30s, there's Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud, and Alfred Adler in Vienna. They all split and went their ways. Carl Jung has many good quotes, a good thinker and therapist. And he said, that which we resist persists. And in a system, the more you try to change somebody else, the more you resist accepting, the stronger and the more it will persist. So let it go. Be 100% accepting. You'll be happier. And then you can have a reasonable response to what's in front of you. If you're protesting and resisting and trying to change everything, you'll have big reactions. Accept it first exactly as it is. Accept every person exactly as they are. Then you can decide what to do with your life in a reasonable sort of way. Okay? So let's hang on a minute. There it is. So this week, while living life from inside your hula hoop, during the past week since we met, do you have any thoughts? Do you have any truths? Do you have any principle that I might have said in your brain from last week? Did you carry anything away with you? Now, if this is your first time, obviously it's your first time. But if you got to watch the video or listen or you were here, tell me what you might have taken away. Change yourself. What was the last part?
Before you can change anybody.
I would be careful about the next part. You can change yourself first before you change somebody else. Let's just work with the first part. And I will help you understand that what most people are looking for in life is how to influence other people.
I'll be your straight man anytime.
That's okay. That's why you're sitting right there. That what they're looking for is to be in a relationship with somebody and understandably influence that human being. Right? You want to have some influence. Well, I can help you learn how to have the best influence in a person's life. I just don't want you to think you're going to change them. Okay, work on yourself. Do you remember the little clip, worry about yourself? I hope you remember that, worry about yourself. Give me another thought. Did you take anything away, and did it stick with you during the week? Yeah?
Change in expectations, not preference.
Oh, I like that. She said change the word expectations to preference. I think that's excellent. Language makes a difference. The words we choose will set us up to how we respond to others and how we respond to life. So don't think of expectations nor needs. I do not allow that word in my therapy office. Needs. Hopes, wishes, wants, preferences, and desires are acceptable. Need is it's setting a person up to be an emotional terrorist. I have needs, thus they're automatically entitled that everybody has to meet them. It's a very strong word. It's like saying, as I said last week, you want me to shoot a hostage? Because this is a way to take emotional hostages. I have needs, and the assumption then is you're not meeting them. So I'm a leg up, I have the soapbox, I'm prosecuting you, you're already guilty. I guarantee you, you will never bring another person to the bar of justice in a relationship. Did you hear that? If you're going to prove them wrong and you're right, let it go. Give it up. You'll never win because they'll call their expert witnesses after you've prosecuted and cross-examined them. They're going to counter you and say, well, are you done? Now I'm going to tell you about you and how you make me feel. That's just the way relationships work. So I would not recommend bringing anybody to the bar of justice. So change the word expectations to preferences. Anything else? In your hula hoop this week, as you motored around. Yeah?
How silly that we use negative words or pressure or action and expect a pardon.
Yes.
Yeah,
isn't that amazing? We will use negative comments and criticism about other people to motivate them to become positive. Now, maybe if you're in business and you pay their salary, maybe you can get by with that. But in relationships where people have free choices, I don't think they're going to be that motivated to positively change after we have used so many negatives against them. Okay, did anything cause you to see your life or any relationships that you're in differently as a result of just reading or thinking together? Did anything make a difference in what you did in life, not what you thought? Ponder that.
I think one thing is when you accuse somebody of something, you put them on the defensive when you use... You did such and such, as opposed to saying inside my hula hoop, I felt disrespected when you did such and such. And so there's a difference to me in the language of accusing and still saying that what you did affected me.
That's wonderfully said. There is a way to say things that are accurate without accusing and being negative against the other person. Well said. And probably next class I'm going to teach you how to have a voice and not get into the trap of having your voice means you're going to get it validated. There's a difference. Most people don't think they have a voice until their voice gets validated. Now, that sounds awfully abstract. Do you understand what I just said? But I encourage all people, you can make simple declarative sentences like, it is a beautiful spring day and the sun is shining. When I did that, I have a voice. I really don't need nor require nor desire your affirmation or validation. I have my own voice. I made a declarative sentence. But most people do this. It's a beautiful, sunshiny spring day. Don't you think so, Josh? And they won't quit until they get the other person to give them a head nod and an affirmation. They'll follow them around endlessly from room to room. Then they'll say, I'm not done. Funny? The other person was done from the beginning. Make sense? So, good words. Okay, did any of you, I'm just asking, happen to read any of the resources on the web page?
Yes.
Yay! Did you find it interesting?
I'm still trying to figure out how to differentiate.
Oh, we're going to do that. That's what we're talking about. Woohoo, big words, right? Good. I'm so glad. Did you find them helpful? Great. I'm so glad. Just for reminders, you can access the website even as we sit here. You can access the PowerPoint slides. If you're having a difficult time seeing them, you can get them on your device. So you can go right to the web page and access it. Or going forward, you can go to the Facebook page. Okay, how about this? Let's go over some questions. True, false. Differentiation is the ability to maintain your sense of self when you are emotionally and physically close to others, especially as they become increasingly important to you. We've got some truths. That is true. Differentiation is the ability to maintain a sense of self the closer you get to somebody who matters the most to you. That's where it gets difficult, as we'll see tonight. That's the challenge. For people who don't matter in our life, it's easy to appear relatively mature. Because they don't matter. It doesn't really challenge your sense of self. It doesn't really challenge you at the core of your hula hoop. Your hula hoop doesn't vibrate. You're happy. You think you're so mature. Life is easy. Your choice capacity is easy. But the more somebody becomes significant in your life, the more challenging it is to retain your shape and your own thinking. The more challenging it is. So differentiation is about growing up in the presence of life's most important relationships. You harness the growth, you don't avoid it. Did you ever think about that? Is that a new thought? Do you realize the more important and significant somebody is to us, the more of a self you're going to need? Time to grow. You need more of a self. So for all those people who long for fantastic relationships and who are avoiding their personal growth, they'll never get it. They're waiting for somebody else to do it for them and somebody else to fill their cup. And they'll talk about it endlessly. But they won't become the kind of people who generate really great relationships. They can't handle it. They take everything way too personal. Their emotions get the best of them. And they want everybody else to absorb them and love them, quote, unconditionally. We'll talk about that. That may be good theologically. I don't buy it in an imperfect world. Love has conditions. If you want unconditional love, go back to mommy and daddy. Maybe they'll love you unconditionally. But I don't know the most significant people in the world will. Really. They might stand up and say, I'm not doing this anymore. You got to grow up. And that's a good thing. Okay? Secondly, emotional fusion is an invisible, tenacious togetherness, force, that helps to create a wonderful positive connection in a relationship. We have adamant false. Any other thoughts? Here it is. Emotional fusion is an invisible, tenacious togetherness force that helps to create a wonderful, positive connection in a relationship. Hint, trick question. Every romantic couple who begins to date is in an emotionally fused state, and they're making each other feel euphoric and wonderful. For a while, we're going to talk about that. So most of the time, I'm going to agree with you, emotional fusion is used negatively, and it is a difficult overconnection that creates complications in relationships. That is mostly true. I worded it on purpose to trick you, to let you know that extreme infatuation is a form of emotional fusion, because the fusion will die down, and what are they left with then?
Your boots.
Boots?
Okay.
Not much.
Well, you're left with some reality. You're left with some reality.
If you're emotionally connected to somebody euphorically, you don't care if your boundaries are perhaps, you know, stepped on. But once you, you know, get used to that person, then you are more concerned about your boundaries.
I like that. So you're getting yourself back. Is that okay to say it that way?
Sure.
The hula hoop collapsed.
Yeah.
Everybody's in one big hula hoop. Until they're not. Oops. Okay, so that's really, it's both true and false, honestly. All right, differentiation is about getting closer and more distinct to form a positive relationship connection rather than one more distant and individuated. True or false? Boy, I'm making you think. It is true. Individuation is the psychological concept of individuating, becoming all that you are out in a big 100-acre open field. Lovely. Differentiation is about growing self up in a relationship. It's very different. So all my clients who individually want to see me, which is good, I'm harnessing their growth, but I have to remind them, bang for the buck is I harness their growth in life's most critical area, that is, as it relates to the most important person in their life. Let's harness that growth when they're with that person. Because when they're with me individually, they're not accessing the stress points, because we're not married, I'm not in relationship with them, I'm just their therapist, right? So it's a different dynamic, but when you have the other significant individual sitting in the room, trust me, people present themselves differently. They don't say as freely as some things that they would say if the other person was in the room. I'm not saying that's good or bad, I'm just saying it's a fact. So what we want to do is harness the critical areas of our life in life's most important relationships. We harness the growth, or it flatlines. Fourth, differentiation is all about working on yourself all by yourself and not caring or about or staying connected with your partner. True or false?
False.
Differentiation allows each person to function more independently and interdependently, more separate and more corrected.
True.
We're going to grow up and be all that you are and be all that you are in life's most important, significant, critical relationships. It's a win-win. It's wonderful. This is the growth you've been looking for. This is the growth that gives you the satisfaction of being in a relationship. Six, giving up your individuality to create a relationship connection is as defeating as giving up your relationship connection to protect and maintain your individuality. Either way, you wind up being less of a person with less of a relationship. Ooh, wrapped your brain up. True or false? Giving up yourself to create a relationship is as defeating in the long run as giving up your relationship to maintain, I gotta be me. Either way, you could wind up with less of a relationship and less of a self. Ah, how I worded it was a lot better then. So there are people who are going to give up all of themselves to form a relationship connection. They're not going to have a hula hoop. They're going to merge with the other person to form a connection. I don't know if it's a sustainable long-term connection when a human being does that. It'll work for a while. Make sense? We'll see tonight about that. There are other people who can barely be in a relationship and they feel squished and they got to go in a 100-acre field and declare, I got to be me. Well, you can err on either side and you wind up with less. 7, when one person reacts to another out of emotional fusion, the other person usually responds in a reasonable, loving, and patient manner. Chuckles all the way around. Very false. When we react out of an overconnection, usually other people react. And then we complain about their reaction. So we want to be immature, act immature, and expect others around us to be loving, patient, kind, forgiving, and put up with us and absorb everything. Well, that'll work for a while until they grow weary of that. Then they'll push back. Okay? Last, jealousy is a form of emotional fusion. That is true. Okay, let's move on now. Remember when we last left off? I'm trying to do my best to make a shift, and I'm presenting an argument to you about making this shift. So last week I was laying the foundation. I know there's a way that people have thought about having relationships, and usually that way is, if I'm going to be in a relationship, I have to focus on the other person, and I have to get them to listen to me, understand me, cooperate with me, and do what I want them to do. Then we're having a really good relationship. Now, that's normal, but it's not efficient. It really doesn't work because the other person is thinking the same thing, and they're going to lobby back and try to change you, and then you're going to try and change them. It's going to get in a massive power struggle. There's a big tug of war, and then they power posture, and because they can't solve it between themselves, they bring in outside authorities, they bring the pastor in, the elder in, they bring God in, and they say, God says do this. Everybody has their trump card. So instead of trying to lobby and change each other, let's make a shift and understand how we can grow in the relationship to form the very best relationship. So in continuing, I said we got to make this shift because our personal growth, get this, must keep pace with the increased significance of personal relationships to keep desire alive. Oh, that's a mouthful. All right, then let me think about it this way. We live in Dallas, Texas, right? Our family, my wife, 3 kids, I'm sorry, we are beach people. We go to Destin, Sandestin. We go to warm places to vacation. I know many others go to Colorado and they like cold. So we have been skiing. I can ski. It's fun. I just don't go very often. But think of a ski illustration. If you're a beginning skier and you work really hard on the bunny slope and you have a teacher and a trainer, you're learning simple things to be on your skis, correct? Snow plowing, how to stop, how to glide, how to snow plow. Doesn't it feel awkward to begin with? Should. It's not normal. You weren't born with skis. You had to learn, so it's awkward. So let's say you work really hard on the bunny slope and you become more comfortable with your ski skills and you start to feel okay. You're feeling less anxious. What do you graduate to? The green slope. Little steeper. And when you begin this journey on the green slope, do you feel automatically comfortable? there's a little bit of anxiety because it's a little steeper and your ski skills are getting challenged, correct? But after practice and practice and time spent with your ski instructor on the green slope, skiing with you, over 3 or 4 days, you become more comfortable. When your ski skills are matching the slope of the ski mountain, the ski slope, and you've practiced and practiced, and now your ski skills are stronger, and you're feeling comfortable, you experience pleasure. Now, on the learning curve, when you first got on the green slope, having graduated from the bunny, was it as fun and pleasurable? No. You had to grow into it. Now, let's say you're on the green slope, and you happen to have a month or 6 weeks off, and you now you spent all week on the green slope. Supposing you're a decent athlete, what are you beginning to experience now? Green slope a week. Boredom. You're ready to graduate to the blue slope, where you go through the same cycle again. Does that make sense? A little fear, trepidation, little management of anxiety, but you're doing this to harness the value because the pleasure of self-mastery and skiing and feeling free on the ski slope makes you feel good. So you're willing to undergo a little bit of discomfort for the sake of a greater joy. And then when you're in that sweet spot on the blue slope and your ski skills are matching the degree of the slope, you feel pleasure and enjoyment and desire. Let's do it again. You with me? Then relationships are the same way. If I help you develop the core inside of you, we're going to grow a solid self, we're going to manage your emotions, we're going to control your anxiety and reactivity, we're going to find the value of why you're doing this, your personal desire will increase because you're mastering yourself on the ski slope and there's great reward and pleasure and your desire opens up. Now, if we take you at a green level skier and put you on diamond double black, what happened to your desire? So if you overski your limits, it kills desire. Still with me? Then let me tie it in relationships. I'm not going to go down this path because it's another 4 weeks with you. But I'm also a sexual therapist. All of sexual desire is, I've just described it to you. People who take themselves on in life's critical relationship, be it marriage, can keep desire alive. Can keep desire alive. Because they're skiing their limits and they're growing, developing a solid core where attraction between them and the person, their lifelong partner, is ever increasing and ever increasing and ever increasing rather than overskiing their limits or expecting all of their partner to wow them and do it for them. You keep desire alive by enhancing your personal growth. If you exceed your limits, you'll kill desire and give up. But if we'll increase you step by step by step, you can enhance your growth and it feeds personal desire. You want to do it more. You want to do it again. That was fun. Let's go. Does that make sense? But people don't know how to harness this in personal relationships. But when you do, you realize we're actually having interactions that we've longed to have that we couldn't have because I was over skiing my limits. But now with these new ski skills, I know how to manage myself. I'm practicing. We're practicing. This is getting better. I'm encouraged and have hope. The same principles apply. We do it all the time when we take on things like get a PhD, get a master's degree, study hard, improve our golf game, improving business skills. We harness these principles, but these same principles can be harnessed inside personal relationships. So why make this shift? Because all relationships, especially business partner relationships, family relationships, and marriage, produce a crucible, a rock and a hard place of growth. And we want to wiggle out, and we want somebody to solve this for us, and the way we want to solve it is we want our partner to change. If our partner will change, it will solve my dilemma. So we spend all our time trying to convince ourselves and the other person they are our problem. But we've got to make this shift because they are not our problem. They never were our problem. They're a stimulus for your growth because you love them and care about them. They're important to you in your life. So as a sand, grains of sand create friction in the oyster, so it is said, to make the pearl, so are significant relationships, be it children, adult children that you've raised, be it your spouse, be it a challenging cousin, an uncle, a sister, a brother. These are stimulants for growth, and we got to make this shift or we'll forever be focused on them, really thinking in our heart and mind, they are our problem. I assure you, they are not your problem at all. I assure you, 100%. They're just who they are, okay? So significant relationships, especially a marriage relationship, creates a pressure cooker. Did you grow up with a pressure cooker? Did your mom cook with a pressure cooker? Do you cook with a pressure cooker? Throw a little bit of water, throw a tough piece of meat in there, a sinewy, tough piece of meat that's going to get dry in the oven, clamp the lid, put it on the stove, heat it up. What happens? It tenderizes. You know that little release valve on top? You know, if that wasn't up there, what would happen? Yeah. So I know we need release valves in life's most significant relationship. So marriage especially is a dialectic. That means it's a relationship of opposites. Opposites create tension. Tension produces maturity, or we flatline, or we try to change everybody else. We're going to use it to change us. Lastly, our source of personal satisfaction is not found by getting more out of your relationship. I want you to make a switch this week. The source of satisfaction is by getting more out of yourself in the relationship that you're in. Be proud of yourself. Do something in the relationship that you're afraid to do. Let your integrity stand up. There's a great source of satisfaction in facing life's greatest fears and taking ourselves on and really embracing personal growth and at least trying. I worked with a sweet couple in Austin via Skype, FaceTime each week. And he couldn't be present. He's an airline pilot. And she said to me, she was actually in her car. Isn't technology wonderful? She was in her car picking up one of her children, getting ready to, and sitting in her car FaceTiming me. And I'm sitting in my office. And she said, I said, how are you? She said, Billy, I did something this week I've never done before, I don't think, in my entire married life. And I said, tell me about it. And she described an incident when her husband came home, and instead of griping and complaining and griping and complaining and being negative and critical because he didn't come in with a good attitude and blah, 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 she didn't do any of that. She let all of that go, accepted him just as he was, for where he was, put her arms around him and said, I miss you. How are you? And she says, I have never done that. And I said, and so? How was that? Now, wouldn't you expect her to say, and he reciprocated and said, honey, that is awesome. I can't believe this. There is a God in heaven. All she said was, he was still mopey and negative and stressed out because he had had a long flight. But I felt tremendously wonderful about myself for having responded that way. I want you to shift your focus that when people are saying they're unhappy in a relationship, I just wonder, are they mostly unhappy with themselves? They could be immensely more happy if they had wonderful integrity, courageous responses. And at least inside their hula hoop said, I'm proud of myself. That was an awesome move. I feel good about who I am, regardless of the other person's response. Let the other person be. Be who you're going to be and feel the reward of that. Make a shift. Don't put all of your eggs, and we'll do this a little bit later, in somebody else's basket as your source of satisfaction. Who you are in it is a big source of joy and happiness. So, we're making the shift. We're going to grow a solid, flexible self. We're going to learn to manage our emotional system. We're going to control personal anxiety and reactivity because life goes better when we learn to do that. You're going to find the value. Why are you doing any of this? You need to have an answer when you get up in the morning, look at yourself in the mirror and go, why am I doing this? You need to have an answer for yourself. What is the value for you? Hold on to that value to get through life's critical, difficult moments. What is the reward at the end? Let's focus on that. Where are you trying to get to? What's your hope and your joy? What are you holding on to get through life's little discomfort moments? So with all the people that I work with, we're going to make a list of their higher values. What are they hoping to accomplish? Why are they here? Where is it ultimately going? What do they value and they treasure? And I'm going to help them hang on as we grow through some difficult times. We've got to find the value. And the value can't be what you want for me or what somebody else wants for you. It has to be your personal value that is meaningful to you that gets you up in the morning and faces yourself in the mirror and say, I know who I am. I know what I'm doing. I know where I'm going. I know what I really value. I'm not sure if anybody's going to cooperate with me. I hope they do, but I know who I am, and I know what I'm about. What you're going to see at the second half after our break is most people start the opposite. They're all about what the other person is thinking for their higher value. They start outside their hula hoop and say, I need to really understand what I think you're thinking about me right now. What do you think? What do I think you're thinking about my higher value? Well, don't start outside your hula hoop. Start inside your hula hoop and anchor yourself right there. Does that make sense? So we're going to establish higher values. And here's the wonderful benefit. Increased desire. As I said, this is a heady quote. I won't belabor it, but he's dead on. The growth of a person is the progressive liberation of desire. The more you grow, you'll liberate want and desire. You'll want more. And I believe that's the way God intended us to be. To want and desire more and more. As C.S. Lewis says in The Weight of Glory, if you really read the Gospels, it would seem that Jesus has considered our personal desires too weak. Not strong enough. Because it's all about desire and personal reward. There's great pleasure to be had in life. It is the process whereby desire finds ever more deeply its subject, not its object, whereby desire comes to be in one who can say ever more deeply and wholly, I want. Now, you have to have strength to want. You have to have strength of character to have desire. People who don't have a strong self gave up on desire years ago. They're needless and wantless. All they want to do is survive or secure and attach to another human being and feed off that human being. They don't have personal want. They don't have personal desire. They just want security. I'm not downing that. I'm saying they're way low level on the growth spectrum. What do they personally desire? It takes want and character. It takes strength to want. So all desire begins by looking for its object. Maybe it's another human being. You are the object of my desire. You got that person. Now what? Now desire is looking for a new me. It's looking for its subject now. Now it's time to grow up and be a courageous person because I got the object of my desire. I got them. But they can't float my boat forever. A little illustration like the ski illustration, I won't belabor it. Sally and I have three children, Lauren, Taylor, and Rachel. When they were growing up, we would go to Six Flags, and our children each wanted to learn to ride rides. They didn't want to walk around, eat a corn dog, and be afraid to get on a ride. So we encouraged them riding. So we began with the mini mine train. Remember the mini mine train? Now, when they get on the mini mine train, they're pretty scared, right? And they're clutching it, and they go over these little hills, right? But the more they would ride it, the more they would master themselves and their fear and their anxiety on the ride. You with me? And then about the third time around, they'd lift no hands. You can see them. They're and they're so proud of themselves. Now the 15th and 16th time around, they're bored. So we go to the mine train. From the mine train, our kids graduated to the Judge Roy Scream. That's the first big hill white roller coaster over by the pond at Six Flags. A big hill. So when our youngest, Rachel, she looked at me and I said, "You ready to do the Judge Roy Scream?" And she goes, "Yeah. Let's go." So we ran over there. She's little. And I said, "All right, when we're on the Judge Roy Scream, it's going to go up the hill. It's going to go click, 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 click. And when it gets to the top, it's going to be silent. We're going to be right up there. There's going to be a pause. And when we go down, I want you to lean forward, ride the ride, scream your head off, ride the ride. Don't push back. Ride the ride. Go with it. And when we go down with it. When we come up with it. When we're going to turn, you turn with it." She goes, "Yeah, okay, 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 okay." She got to the top of the hill, and it's deathly quiet with the wind. There ain't no click, 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 click now. I said, "Here we go, here we go." She screamed her head off. She threw herself forward. She rode every turn. She got off at the end. She goes, "Let's go again." So all of them, then one day, during Thanksgiving, they open up the park, and the Titan, the big roller coaster, the Titan, and they have a couple of hard turns, and it pulls some G's. And so my son was like, "Dad, you know it. You pull some G's, you kind of lose consciousness for a moment." So I showed him how the Blue Angels, their solo pilots, learn. They fly without oxygen for the exhibition. How to keep the oxygen from depleting from their brain by keeping it up in their upper body. And I said, "Try that when you do it." He came home that night. He said, "Dad, I rode it 7 times in a row and I never lost consciousness." This is the joy of self-mastery. So we wanted to teach our kids, ride the ride. So the ride doesn't ride you. We want to teach them to manage their anxiety, grow a solid self, grab on to life's adventures, find the value and increase personal desire to enjoy all they can in this life in a wonderful, exhilarating manner. This is a book. The title is Jesus, the Liberator of Desire. Now that's a book worth reading, my friend. The Liberator pushes us through our fears. So, let's shift to a model that is personal growth oriented, which is what we're doing. We're shifting to a model that is non-cooperation based. Would you like, wish, prefer cooperation in a relationship? Of course you would. Hope, desire. But I've got to shift you. It's not required. If it's required, you better follow the other person around, get them in a headlock, and keep doing this, convincing them that for you to get better, they have to cooperate with you. I just want to free you up and say that's not true. They do not have to cooperate. They do not have to understand you. They do not have to see the world the way you do. They do not have to get it. We hope they do. I wish they do. If you say they have to, you are tied to them. Good luck, because now you must follow them around and convince them all of your waking moments to cooperate, understand you, so together, isn't this interesting? You can create a great relationship. I don't know where their choice capacity was in that. I don't know if they got a vote. But I know that people script relationships in their head and try to get the other person to fit into it. That's what they do. When the other person resists, you have a reasonable human being resisting. But the other person says, "You're so stubborn. You're oppositional." Oh, okay. It's usually a response to somebody who's very controlling. So, I don't know. Where do we go with that? Non-cooperation based. It includes freedom of choice. People get to pick and choose. They have to find the value to cooperate and have a good relationship. They can't just go on yours, right? Non-binding and one that matches reality. Yay. And promotes the correct sequence. We got to get things in the right order. And then our goal? Maturity. We proclaim him, admonishing every man, teaching every man with all wisdom. We can present every man complete. And that's why portions of the wisdom literature say, look, consider it all joy when you encounter various trials, because they're growing you up. They're testing you. And endurance is a wonderful thing, so you can be complete and mature. So, we've made the shift. You've been so patient. I've lobbied for the foundation of where I'm going, that the best way to improve relationships is to harness the personal growth because we're in a significant relationship. And that's the best way. You'll get satisfaction galore, you'll increase delight and pleasure, and maybe the other person will join with you. So take a break right now. When we come back, we start in with growing a solid, flexible self. Okay, everybody. So did you hear anything? Did you hear anything that stuck with you just as we've gathered today? Anything different? A twist on anything? That maybe later you'll go, If not, that's okay, I'm just asking. Did you ever tie in together personal growth and personal desire? Have you ever thought about desire as being tied to personal growth?
Great question. No.
I wouldn't expect you would, but it's there in our everyday lives, and I think we experience it. I just don't think we have enumerated why we're experiencing what we're experiencing. But when we take on something that we find value in, either to study hard for an exam and then you really kill it and you make a great grade. You experience a lot of personal joy, but in order to do that, you take on great amounts of stress and anxiety. But the reward is worth it. And then you master yourself because you're learning to do things that otherwise you couldn't do. And it just feels so wonderful. And there's great reward if we harness that in our lives as they pertain to personal relationships, rather than thinking the other person is the source of my fulfillment. It just can't be. Any other thoughts? Anything? Just kind of stay with you.
I think the thing for me is that what you said about feeling good about yourself, as opposed to perhaps, you know, breaking something and feeling good in the moment, mm-hmm. that the overall, you know, goal is to feel good about yourself. But I also think you have to truly know how to love yourself in a healthy way to know to feel good about yourself, that it's, mm-hmm. you know, rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So to feel good about oneself, it is good to attach to higher values and not get bogged down in the weeds. That was the first part of what you said. So attach to higher values helps us get through life's momentary discomfort and disappointments. We can make sense if we hold on to our higher values about who we are and why we're doing what we're doing. And your tagline is to feel good about yourself. It's also important to understand about loving oneself and giving oneself some credit for some things. And I think that's really true. Any other thought before we push on about growing a solid, flexible self? Okay. Now, picture yourself inside your hula hoop. And this week, when you walk around and you're doing your life, I want you to remember you're inside your own hula hoop. This is a great place to be. You can learn a lot about yourself, learn a lot about your responses, your thoughts, your emotions, your actions towards other people. There's a fascinating world in here. And remember, God meets us inside our hula hoop. That's a good thing. To know love, forgiveness, grace, and mercy all takes place inside this hula hoop. It's a wonderful place to be. So when you walk around inside your hula hoop, I want you to carry yourself well. Now, to have a solid, flexible self, I want you to picture that you're inside your hula hoop and you're balanced nicely on both feet. You're balanced. You feel good. You're not over-leveraged. You're not overly dependent. You're balanced. In this way, suppose something in life pushes me. There's a way to regain balance, to come back to center, to come back to a place of anchoring. So we're going to balance ourselves on our own two feet, and you're going to live your life, and you're going to relate to people from inside your hula hoop. You're going to relate to them, and they are inside their hula hoop. You're going to give them space, and you're going to bring your best to speak to the best in them. From your best, you're going to speak to the best in them. Not from your worst, but from your best. So we're going to grow a solid, flexible self. And this whole term, as you understand and as you read the material, this idea of differentiation has its origins in cellular biology. So how do cells connect, but they don't gobble each other up? How does the human body work in a wonderful symphony, giving room for diversity and singularity? Cancer cells, problem cells, may gobble up other cells. We don't want that to happen. So differentiation is about how the human body forms a wonderful mixture of cells in harmony but in distinction. The heart is a muscle. It has cells. other areas of the body, the eye. And so even when you think in Corinthians, when Paul talks about the human body being a wonderful balance of singularity and diversity, all working together. But here's what you must remember. For beautiful relationships to happen, or for the human body to be functioning well, or for an ecosystem to be functioning well, those individual parts must manage themselves. I can't have one rogue part gobbling up and invading other parts. So in a family system, we're going to teach everybody to reasonably manage themselves in their hula hoop so we can have togetherness. The best togetherness is predicated on living organisms' ability to manage themselves. Let me say it again. The best togetherness assumes and is predicated that I can manage myself reasonably in an interaction and you can manage yourself reasonably in an interaction. If one of us comes unglued, cannot manage themselves in the interaction is going to take an interesting turn, which happens all the time. So I need at least one person managing themselves, because when both people lose the management of themselves in the presence of each other, Katie, bar the door. It's just a bloodletting until somebody regains their position inside their hula hoop. Now what you're going to see in just a moment is the reason a living organism has to manage itself inside its own hula hoop. It's the best way to enhance togetherness and have a family or a relationship or a good relationship, is because most human beings find their regulating, soothing mechanism outside of their hula hoop in the other person. So they seek to soothe themselves by attaching themselves to the other human being. Now this is quite a big assumption, because this assumes that if this person hooks their boat and trailer to this person's Suburban, that this person who's driving the Suburban is going to drive reasonably. What usually happens is when this one partners up and hooks onto this person in a symbiotic relationship as their soothing mechanism, the other person is going to drive erratically with this person screaming in the back of the boat, "Stop! Turn left!" To which the person doesn't stop, speeds up, and turns right. So it all breaks down. So I need a governing system inside this hula hoop, a governing system inside this hula hoop. It's called discipline, self-control, management of the emotional system, managing your reactivity and your anxiety, and managing your behaviors, so that people can converse reasonably. Because if they both get vibrating, I don't know who's supposed to manage whom, but they start trying to manage each other. Does that make sense? And again, if you have teenagers or have had teenagers, the number one job of a teenager in your household is to get your hula hoops vibrating so that one or both parents will come unglued. Then the teenager goes, "See what I live with? I told you they're crazy." And then the teenager says, "I didn't do anything. It wasn't me." But now mom and dad are totally vibrating. This is just normal in a family system. So togetherness is predicated on a living organism's ability to maintain its shape in its hula hoop. If every time you get very close to somebody who's so significant in your life, you lose your shape and merge into them, it'll feel good for a little while until it won't. Now tell me, when wouldn't it? Now you're outside of your hula hoop and you merged into them. It might feel good to begin with, Gigi, and when might it not?
When they're unhappy with you, then you're unhappy with you.
Say it again.
When they're unhappy with
At some point. Absolutely. Okay, so the balance and the equilibrium, you said, when the person is unhappy with himself or they're unhappy. Yes, right. When that person. Yes, they're happy. Okay. When they become tired of being the donor and you the borrower. Make sense? You're borrowing your okayness off of them. At first, they'll feel euphoric and maybe even feel wonderful and like a rescuer. They love to be in the giving position while you are symbiotically attached to them. Until they decide, I'm tired of this. This is a heavy burden. I can't take care of your okayness or your self-esteem or your insecurity anymore. I'm tired of providing all the good feelings for you. I'm going to kick you off my raft. She doesn't want to. I know.
She's
the wind beneath your wings. And she loves being the wind between beneath your wings, right? She loves that.
Until she's tired of it.
Until she's tired. She's like, ah, oh, come on. Grow up. Stand on your own 2 feet, honey.
It's not my job to keep you cheered up.
That's right. It's not my job to keep you cheered up. Okay. So you got to see that a living organism in its hula hoop that can't manage itself spills over into other hula hoops. And then you have to tolerate these people or try to love them and understand them, but they can't manage themselves in their own hula hoop. So if a person has a difficulty maintaining their shape, every time he or she gets near you, pay attention, make adjustments in how you relate to them. Hold on to yourself, relate well, manage yourself and manage your response. All right, so we want to stay connected with a person of significance without overly giving ourselves away and also not pulling back where there's no connection. So it's an oscillation. We want to lovingly connect, not overconnect, but I don't want to be too distant. I want to stay in proximity the best way I can, grow, stay in connection, grow, stay in connection as best I can. I don't want to overly connect. I don't want to run out of the room going, I've got to be me. Now my bucket might get full. Want to do the best we can. So the ability to stay rooted and grounded in one's identity, one sense of self. Differentiation is about getting closer and more defined in life's best relationships. All right, I bet you'll recognize this.
I don't even know what kind of eggs you like. Yes, 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 that's right. With a priest, you wanted scrambled. With a deadhead, it was fried. With the other guy, the bug guy, it was poached. Now it's like, egg whites only. Thank you very much.
That's called changing your mind.
No, that's called not having a mind of your own.
Maggie, what are you doing?
You really want that guy up there to drag you up Annapurna for your honeymoon?
You do not want to climb Annapurna.
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's it from? Runaway Bride. So what has he figured out about Maggie?
She's kind of
people pleaser.
She's a total people pleaser. How did he figure that out?
Her eggs.
Oh, she had no defined self. If you ask Maggie, how do you like your eggs? She has no defined self. She likes her eggs in whose presence of however they like their eggs. Right? So whatever guy she's in a significant relationship with, he liked his eggs scrambled. So guess what? Maggie likes her eggs scrambled. Oh, whoa. But the other guy liked it poached, and this is a new guy in Maggie's life, and now Maggie has no self. She has no defined self. She doesn't have her own thought. And so now she's convinced herself she likes eggs poached. So you see, at the top of Maggie's list is what might be called attachment. Maggie simply wants to attach and not grow a self, so she's going to take on the characteristics of whatever self she's in the presence of and not ever have a mind of her own. So I like it when she tries to muster up a counter argument. No. You have me all wrong, my friend. I was merely changing my mind. To which he says, no, Maggie, that's called not having a mind of your own. Brilliant. Maggie has to decide on her own, apart from any significant human being, how she likes her eggs. But if she's in the presence of somebody she wants to like her, she will not be able to know which egg she likes, because the gravitational force is pulling on her and she can't think for herself. Make sense? She loses her own thinking ability the closer she gets to the object of significance. Pause a moment. Because sometimes I'll do this in my office just for fun. I used to have a hula hoop. Maybe one day I'll get it back, but I just do this instead. Inside, is having that hula hoop, it looks funny in my office. Like, ooh, what's that? You know, ooh, hula, right? So sometimes think in terms of physics just for a moment, right? Go back to old high school physics. So Newton's gravitational laws have something to do with the larger mass, the greater the gravitational pull. The larger mass of a planet, the greater the gravitational pull. So the moon is in the orbit of the Earth. Why? Uh-huh. And what is holding it in that orbit? The Earth's larger gravitational pull. What are we in the orbit of? The sun, which is massive and bigger. Here's how I want you to think about relationships. Whoever has the most significance, the largest body of mass, has the greatest gravitational pull in a relationship. The more significant they are, the larger mass we've assigned them. They're so significant. Oh my gosh! The larger the pull to pull you into the orbital path of their gravitational significance. Make sense? Now the question you have to ask yourself is, why do they have that gravitational pull in your life? Why are they so significant? So let's say it's a professor, you esteem this professor, you want to do well, you want to raise your hand, ask the right questions, choose me, I know the answer to that, right? And you want the professor to look at you and say, brilliant, oh my gosh, incredible insight, my friend. Rarely have I had a student in all my years of teaching come up with a question as brilliant. Fellow students, commend this human being. Brilliant beyond brilliant. Okay, that's what you hope for. So you strive, you watch, you strive, you look. Okay, I've read the right words. Mina? Got a question? Got a comment? Okay, you so want to please because somehow this person has incredible significance in your heart and life. So the mass is getting bigger. The gravitational pull is pulling you into their orbit. That's something. It's a real thing. Walk into a room and look around and see who do you deem most significant? Who do you alter yourself in whose presence? And how are you altering yourself and why? We'll get to that just a little bit. They must have a strong gravitational pull, and you're losing your shape. Did you ever be in somebody's presence and you said something absolutely stupid that you normally wouldn't say? All the time. It's like, why did I just say that? And then when you walk out and you're outside and the sun is shining, you go, okay, I'm sane now. I'm back in my right mind. Oh my gosh. Whew. I acted like a stupid person. Yes. I wonder why you got so altered and your hula hoop totally collapsed. Still with me? Now, this is a funny clip. Bear with it. I even like it. And you know, in spite of the political situation or whatever you might think, some of the movies are still good. I'm talking about Woody Allen right now. Okay? So I like this because it's a quasi-documentary. It's purposely made to look black and white, old-fashioned by Woody Allen. And I like it when they show some news clippage. They have purposely made the sound and the lips not match up on purpose to make it look like, oh, this is just bad technology and they were getting it wrong. Now, this is from the movie Zelig, right? So Zelig is a patient of a psychiatrist and he has a malady that whoever's presence he's in, he takes on their shape. Okay? Here we go.
Dr. Fletcher arranges a series of experiments and invites the skeptical staff to observe. With the doctors watching, Zelig becomes a perfect psychiatrist. When two Frenchmen are brought in, Zelig assumes their characters and speaks reasonable French. In the company of a Chinese person, he begins to develop Oriental features. By now, word has gotten out to the press, and the public, thirsting for thrills and novelty, is immediately captivated. The clamor is so great that Dr. Alan Sindel is forced to issue a statement.
We're just beginning to realize the dimensions of what could be the scientific, medical phenomenon of the age, and possibly of all time.
Fresh stories roll off the press every day about Zelig and his puzzling condition. Although the doctors claim to have the situation at hand, no two can agree on a diagnosis.
I'm convinced that it's nothing or a lecture at all. There's no evidence now of any dysfunction. I'm sure that further tests will show a problem in the secretions.
I'm certain it's something he picked up from eating Mexican food.
The manifestation is neurological in origin. Now, this patient is suffering from brain tumor, and I should not be surprised if within several weeks he dies. Now, we have not as yet been able to locate the tumor, but we're still looking.
Ironically, within 2 weeks' time, it is Dr. Bersky himself who dies of a brain tumor.
There you go. How ironic. Now, Zelig has a difficult condition, right? Every time he's in the presence of somebody very, very significant, he assumes their shape. He can't hold on to himself. There are only two types of connection in this world. A connection you have with another human being, a person, that includes psychological separateness, that is, the ability to hold on to your shape, or a connection without separateness called emotional fusion, codependency, enmeshment, any number of terms. This is a thick, thick glue between human beings, emotional fusion, codependency, enmeshment, that glues them together. So when you see statements, incidents of great tragedy, somebody files for a divorce or gets custody of their children, goes to the courthouse, the other spouse shows up, murders everybody, shoots them in the head, and does a murder-suicide. My friends, that is a living example of extreme emotional fusion. That's what that is. There is connection with no psychological separateness. Intense jealousy is thick glue that bonds one human being internally to another one, even if they're physically across the room. It's a thick glue that has a constant, I'm watching you. Do you remember Sting in the Police, the group Police? Oh, can't you see you belong to me? How cruel heart aches, right? With every step it takes. What's he talking about in that song? I'll be watching you. Do you know what it is? She's left him. He's emotionally fused. He's intensely focused on how dare you leave me. Can't you see you belong to me? Oh. You see, if O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Simpson Brown, which I believe he did, it's because of intense emotional fusion. She was an extension of his ego, trying to make a physical emotional separation for which he's watching, so if she smiles, laughs at a social setting with people she's just met, he's going to walk over, cross the room, and say, do you know those people? No, I just met them. You laugh with them in ways you don't laugh with me. You sure you haven't seen them before? No, I just met them. I want to see your phone. This is a thick emotional connection where all of the self is being gathered from this human being. It's thick. It's a thick, tenacious emotional connection without psychological separateness. This is why Edwin Friedman, a former rabbi, a writer of books, a family therapist, he said, it is my perception that a togetherness force is more blind to the separate force than separateness is to togetherness. By this I mean, this strange movement towards togetherness between human beings seems more natural. And precisely because of this, the forces for separate must be more vigilant. You've got to maintain yourself in your hula hoop because everybody wants you in their orbit. Come into my orbit. Or you'll want to go into their orbit to divest yourself of yourself, to ride on their raft and feel euphoric. It will feel euphoric until they kick you off. And then you're all on your own, plunged back into darkness. Coming together seems to be a natural process. There appears to be nothing in life itself that checks the togetherness force from snuffing out individuality except the vigilance of separateness to protect itself. This is why it's one of my favorite quotes. He says, so as I began to focus on this emotional process, it became obvious to me that a universal problem for all partnerships, marriage and otherwise, is not one of getting closer. No. Rather, it's preserving self while you're in the close relationship, something that no one made of flesh and blood seems to do very well. I eventually came to define my marriage counseling as trying to help people separate so they wouldn't have to separate. How do you like that? That's brilliant. Because he's seeing a trading of selves. So here we go. Hang on. Here's the heart and core and the guts of tonight. Here it is. What is a reflected sense of self? A reflected sense of self is the very first self that you and I develop. You can understand this. When a baby is born, this baby is making eye contact. You're not born with a self. You must grow a self, create a self, and develop a self. You don't have a God-given automatic self inside. You had to accumulate it through interactions with other human beings. So when adults are looking over and they're cooing and they're going, that's so nice, the baby's so sweet, right? And that baby's making eye contact. That baby's brain is developing a concept of itself. How? From where? Yes. Excuse me?
Outside.
Yes. From a human being's reflection back to them. Yes. So when they're making contact with us, their brain is gathering images and assessing who they are through our reflexive responses. They're collecting it and gathering a growing sense of them. We see ourselves through the eyes of those that are important to us. We internalize how others see us, did you hear that? And treat us as indications and representations of who we are. How you treat me tells me about me when I'm little. Oh, did you hear my last phrase? Because I'm no longer gathering myself from you. But when you're little, you're gathering all of the knowledge of yourself by how the significant people talk to you and treat you as indications of who you are. That's how we develop. From infancy, our minds look to other minds to support our own self-awareness. Because I have none. You are the fountain of my self-awareness, and I'm now relying on this reflected sense of self to tell me who I am in your presence. Uh-oh. Hang on. I don't know what happened. Nice. Hang on. Stay with me. Stay with me. Don't go away. It just kind of just said, bye-bye, Billy. It said, bye-bye. Hang on. Stay with me. I'm good. Oh, I'm so good. Come on. There we go. Do you know baby girls, in the development of their brains, which in utero has been marinated in estrogen, unlike little boy babies, their communication centers in their brain are developing, and especially little girl infants will make eye contact with older adults, talking to them. They'll face map. Little boys, not so much. Little boys will notice objects, golf clubs, balls, toys. They have a tougher time focusing on faces. Little girls, because their brains have been marinated in estrogen, whereas little boys in utero, when the XY chromosomes kicked in about 8 weeks into development, another hormone came rushing in, testosterone, and started killing off our brain cells in the communication centers. It started obviating, blocking, it stunted our growth. Whereas little girls marinated in all of this estrogen with no testosterone getting in the way, no male androgens allowed in the brain. And so girls will face gaze to get a read on relationships and who's doing what and where do we stand. They'll notice. Guys, on the other hand, are somewhat quasi-autistic. We're low-level Asperger's. We don't quite get that the face has been communicating something. So when our wives say, haven't you noticed? No, it's been 4 days and I'm doing great. Right? Haven't you seen the looks on this face? No, I just thought you ate something and didn't really sit well with it. I don't know, honey. I didn't know what that look really meant. So we are oblivious to this kind of thing. Girls are interested in emotional expressions, which tell them about themselves. They have a greater ability to read faces, distinguish emotional tones and voices. This connection helps them create a successful self. Girls do mommy checks for approval more than boy, babies, and infants. Okay? Checking. Little girl's checking to do eye contact with mommy. And mommy's doing eye contact back. Okay? So, the problem with boys.
Wait, no. No. Hey, don't do it. No. Don't do it. Don't do it. No. 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 Don't even think of no.
Okay, wait, wait, wait. Does he ever grow out of it? We have a resounding no from the female members of this crowd. I can hear my wife, Sally. Honey, no. Honey, no. No. No! No! Especially when I'm driving. No! Just saying. We don't get it, right?
Can we do that again?
So later, when we get into a relationship, it's understandable we borrow our sense of self from the person we are attracted to and them to us. Our sense of self becomes like a balloon the other person inflates. When inflated, we look and feel better because we're getting our reflection from this other person. Does that make sense? Whether you want to call that approval, affirmation, validation, sense of self, sense of okayness, the source is out here. We're borrowing it from this person because it makes us feel great because they're significant in our life. Oh, I love you so much. You're so wonderful. You're incredible. Oh my gosh, I'm so fortunate to have you in my life. So we're going to borrow, and the donor is thinking what when this begins? Oh my gosh. I just love being the donor. Thank you for gathering your whole self from me. I like to make people feel really, really good about themselves because I'm that good. Until the borrower of their reflected sense of self keep my balloon inflated, right? Until the donor gets tired of pumping up the balloon. Correct? A reflected sense of self and borrowed functioning are natural to human beings. But the challenge is don't become dependent upon this. This is how we grew and developed. We look to everybody else to tell us how we were. Am I okay? So when people say, we okay? Most of the time that means, I'm not sure I'm okay. I'm really worried about what you think of me right now. I'm really worried about what you think of me, so I need to know how you're doing so that I'm doing okay. Are you okay? Oh my gosh, I'm okay now. And if you're not okay, I'm not okay. Holy crap. Okay, wait a minute. I am tethered to you with a straw. I'm gathering myself from you. Hopefully you're gathering yourself from me. I call this, at this stage, two ticks on a dog and no dog. That's all it is. I got one parasite. I got another one. Until they're both bone dry. And these couples in my office actually think at that point they go bone dry, something's going wrong. I got to tell them, it's about time. That wasn't going to last. You're not going to get all of yourself from them, and they're not going to get it from you, so this was bound to happen, and it's going right. There's always something right about what seems to be going wrong. This is going right. Let's get a new source to gather yourself from. You're not going to get it from this person. Why did you think you could? Oh, fusion. I'm not going to do that right now. So when our self is dependent upon the reflection I'm getting back from you, still with me? A reflected sense of self. Let's do this. Okay, Josh, you just stay right there. There you go. Now, let's say Josh is my friend. I'm in a relationship with Josh. He's a good guy. We go out, we hang out, drink a little bit, have fun, play some golf, high five each other. I think Josh is so incredible, so awesome, and I have slipped into gathering myself and my okayness from Josh. Now, what Josh doesn't understand is he's got a mirror right here, and when I'm relating to Josh, when Josh pings back positive reflections of me, I'm actually looking at Josh as the mirror to ping back my okayness. Make sense? So Josh is my mirror to gather my reflected sense of self from. Because I love Josh. I'm for Josh. Josh is great. Josh is awesome. Me, Josh. We together. Okay? Now here's what's going on. Josh might not realize it until some critical moment when there's a wrinkle and I go, Josh, you okay? And Josh is like, yeah, I'm fine. No, Josh, you really okay? I mean, dude, you okay? Josh is like, yeah, I said I'm okay. No, I mean, you look upset, Josh. You look really upset, okay? Are you mad, Josh? Well, I wasn't, Billy, until right now. I'm starting to get damn irritated, okay? So what's the deal? Okay, what Josh doesn't understand is I am getting a lot of my ping back reflected sense of self from Josh, not from inside my hula hoop. Josh has been the source and has become the source because he's so significant. He's got this strong gravitational pull, and I'm in the orbit now. And I am now dependent upon my reflected sense of self, and I've lost my position in this relationship because I'm getting the sense of self from the ping back, and I'm looking for affirmation, validation, and we okay. And then if Josh just happens to have a bad moment because Josh lives his life in his own hula hoop, I'm thinking it's about me. It's not about me. But if my reflected sense of self is dependent and I'm getting it from Josh, I'm leveraged. I'm not free. This is master, slave. That's what this is. Master, slave. Make sense? So, people who are gathering, thanks Josh, people who are gathering their reflected sense of self from the other person have to become good at mind monitoring. You can call it mind mapping. Mind monitoring. Do you remember RoboCop, the original version? So RoboCop, he's a police officer who gets kind of shot up, and they rebuild him, and they make him into... Stop that. They rebuild him into kind of a bionic person, right? Here we go. It just kind of wants to shut me down. Hang on. Come on. Come on back. It, you know what? It's, I don't like it that it's doing that to me, though. Hang on. Yeah, there we go. There we go. It kicked me off again. Hang on. Stay with me. I don't know why. I don't know why. Okay, so press on. I got neither on either. All right. So in mind monitoring, I'm hitting living room. A person, if I get my reflected sense of self from the other person, I've got to become really good at mind monitoring. I'm sorry. Mind monitoring, like RoboCop, means you do this. I'm mapping all the facial expressions and I'm collecting data. I'm now collecting data about who you are and who I think you are. Does that make sense? I'm constantly looking for data. I'm constantly watching your mind and I'm mapping your face, mapping your mind, because my reflected sense of self requires me to have the ability to read and monitor your facial expressions and where I think you are. My reflected sense of self is now dependent on my ability to mind map and watch you. So RoboCop goes like this. Collect data. Assess the situation. So the greater emotional self that I have, reflected sense of self that I am dependent upon, the more I am dependent upon that, the more I have to get good at mind mapping. Well, guess what becomes my focus? You. So I got to watch. To know how I am, I've got to watch you. What do I think you're thinking? So I've got to discern. You seem down right now. What's wrong? See, I could even phrase it like I'm concerned about you, but I'm not concerned about you. I'm concerned about me because I'm gathering all of my reflection from you. If you depend on a reflected sense of self, you're constantly monitoring the other person, manipulating the other person's mind through interactions to get a positive sense of self that you want and require. So you're always positioning yourself. Oh, you seem a little upset. I'll position myself this way. Let me ask you a question. I think I anticipate already the answer that I want you to give or I think you might give. So I'll position myself for the answer that I think that you're about to give. I'm not really listening and interacting from my hula hoop, creating space and presenting myself. I'm all the time posturing, watching, monitoring, repositioning, counterbalancing, because I'm getting my reflection from you. Don't you understand that? You're my source. Got it? When you rely on someone for a positive, reflected sense of self, you will invariably try to influence and control him or her to gain the positive validation that you believe you need. The more the reflected sense of self drives you, the more you will look to others for validation. The more others will feel oppressed and controlled. The more you will try to regulate yourself through another person, the more you trigger their refusal to submit to your tyranny. They'll push back. Then you'll grab on more because you're getting yourself from them. This is natural when they push back. Unconditional positive reinforcement from this person will not result in filling your bucket and giving you a solid sense of self. Let me say that again. It's a myth to think once they give you the unconditional love that you so desire and pump up your reflected sense of self, you'll finally be great, you will feel loved, and your unconditional love will float your boat. Not true. Bogus. The only thing that does it is courage, standing with integrity, facing on life, facing your biggest fears, and standing and presenting yourself with courage. You've got to break out of the dependency. Nobody can give you enough unconditional love that you're going to have positive regard and feel good about yourself, because it requires courage. That's what it requires. Courage. The Wizard of Oz. And what do you lack? Courage. That's what it requires. A solid sense of self develops from confronting yourself, challenge yourself, getting yourself back. to do what's right, anchoring to your higher values and earning your own self-respect, it develops from inside the hula hoop rather than internalizing what's around you. Okay, I'm going to quit with this. We bring our reflected sense of self into significant relationships, including marriage, because it got us there. I love you, you love me. You have a mirror, I have a mirror. We each give ourselves positive, reflected sense of self. Make sense? One day it's all going to crumble. But marriage and significant relationships are an ecosystem, a pressure cooker, designed to help us become adults. You notice I said not just marriage, significant relationships. By making our reflected sense of self incredibly vulnerable, unsustainable, and untenable, it will work a number on it. Make sense? Now, on the website, I have a series of questions. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 that I want you to ask yourself. So go, here's one. What is the gravitational pull that pulls you into the orbit of another person's hula hoop? The pull to please them? The pull to pump up your reflected sense of self? What is the gravitational pull? And how do you alter yourself and when do you feel it? I have a series of 8 questions. Look at them. That's your homework. Next week, provide some answers. I'd be interested in what you discover this week inside your hula hoop. You've been great. Thank you so much. See you next week.